Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyflip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauder, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
Dunkle.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
A lot of rain here. Bus people are probably cheering because it's not raining right at the moment.
Yeah, it was raining here earlier, but
here too.
Yeah, but it stopped. That's always good.
Yep. For now.
So,
anyway. Summertime we get visitors into the winery all the time, and it's always fun and always really cool when I get people from different states coming in. And they start telling me about a winery around them, and it's one that I've talked to, one that I've interviewed, Prairie Berry. Okay, I think that's in Idaho. Somebody was in, and they said, yeah, there's this little winery not too far from us called Prairie Berry. And I'm going, really? Yeah, I talked to them, you know. And it's really a lot of fun that so many of these people come in, and they start talking about these wineries, and I talk to them. You know, they've been interviews.
South Dakota, Hill City, that's the same. Yeah, Hill City, South Dakota, Prairie Berry.
So South Dakota, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really, you know, the South Dakota. But you know, people come in and mention wineries around them, and I say, yeah, I've talked to them. So, my wine tonight, which I need my engineer to bring me the bottle so I can tell you, but my wine tonight is from Texas. It is from Grapevine, Texas. It was made and bottled by Suvino Winery. It says Suvino is Spanish and Italian. It means your wine. The image of the hand is a symbol of uniqueness, the gateway to the heart, and the mark of a craftsman. And I am enjoying Peachy Keen.
Ah, okay.
Suvino tonight. We dug it out and decided that this would be a good summertime wine. And so this is one that Mike brought me. And so,
I was going to say that sounded familiar. It's been a while, but yeah, back in
yeah, it's been a while. We've had it racked and put away, and then we just the engineer said, hey, this is summertime. It's hot. The Peachy King sounds like it should be a very, very good wine to have with the program tonight. So we are enjoying a Peachy King, and it's Peachy King.
I was going to ask, what does it taste like to you?
First thing I did is I picked it up and I smelled it, and I go, wow, that smells like peaches. And then I taste it, and it was it's good. Let's see, how to describe it? Hint of peaches with this little bite of the alcohol in it, but not overpowering. A nice balance, I think. It's
cool.
Good. Yeah, it's a great summer drink.
Well, good. That's awesome. I remember going. Yeah, I remember they were downtown. Well, downtown. I don't think there's much of a downtown at Grapevine, but they're in that row of 8 or 9 wineries all up and down the main street there. So it was a pretty cool place. Yep. Yeah, good deal. Oh, awesome.
But very, very peachy. Just a nice. Really is a very nice summertime drink. You would not expect something like this coming out of Texas.
Right. Right.
Peaches? Texas?
Speaking of berries, have you finished, I don't know where berries came from, that's not a berry. Have you finished the strawberry port bottling, or you still have more that you have
yes,
to do there?
Yes, all done already, all set. And it's selling into the bottle. We sell an awful lot of that. It's unbelievable how much. And, it's all done. It makes for long days, though. Oh, man, let me tell you. Because I don't want to let it set around. When I start bottling it, it needs to be done. And started at early morning. When I say early morning, I went in there and I was there by 7:30, and I know it's just it's one of those odd hours to when you don't have to and you get up and go in there. So I was in there by 7:30, and I started a bottle, and it just takes so long. And I thought it was going to be done, and just it stretched out, and I'm going, oh my gosh, I've got a long ways to go. I called my engineer, and I said, get a hold of you, and better let you know that I'm doing that. But I got everything done. Everything's in the bottle. Everything is good, and
good.
It turned out well. It really did. It's I didn't change the formula too much from the previous one, so it's really almost exactly like the one you had. It hasn't changed anything. So, but I had to get some more on the shelf. I was running out, and so it worked well. Got the bottles in.
Let the people know next time they visit, when they come down, they better get there quick because it does leave your shelves very quickly.
It really does. People say, what's your biggest seller? And I said, well, they all sell, but I really should answer. The strawberry port really does jump out of here. I had a customer from Connecticut, Vermont, I don't know, one of those states up there. I really can't remember, and I apologize to him. But he and his wife came in. They were here about 5 months ago. They're looking at moving down here to Florida probably in a couple of 3 years. But they were in 5 months ago, and they had a full tasting, did the strawberry port, and loved it. Got a couple of bottles of it, took it home with them. Well, they stopped by again Monday. They were on a cruise out of Tampa, and they made a special trip up to pick up some wine, a couple more of the strawberry ports. And she said that he will go into a winery and taste their port and say, oh, this, you really need to try Florida State's winery port. This is nothing compares to that. And she said that everywhere he goes, he tells people that Florida State Winery Ford beats theirs. And I go, don't tell wineries that.
That's awesome.
But he goes, but it's good. And I said, I know it is. It, but, you know, don't be telling other wineries that. But he's a big fan of Portland. He says, well, see you at Christmas. Awesome. Coming down at Christmas for another cruise. We're going to stop by and pick up some more.
All right. Yeah. Very good. All right. Yeah, it's delicious. If you're in the area, you know, near Tampa on that side, Land O'Lakes area, of course, that's where you're located, then stop by. And now, is that one of the ones that you can do on a tasting or no? Like if someone came in and did a regular tasting, you could do
I
that
always
on the
include
tasting.
The port. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the good things about bottling the port, too, is that while I'm bottling it, I always have myself a glass of it right there, and I'm sipping on it the whole time I'm bottling. So that really makes the bottling so much better.
Yeah. Well, you have to check it out.
That's right. Continuously.
Quality quality control.
Yes. All the time.
I'd go nuts. I know I'd go nuts. I don't know how you do it. You know, I don't know. I'd get started, and then the next thing you know, is like, what is today?
Yeah. Oh no. I got a bottle all that.
I was thinking. 4 ounces would turn into 8 ounces, would turn into 16 ounces. The next thing you know, I'm like calling Uber or a cab or something to pick me up.
Come and get me. Yeah. I'll finish this tomorrow.
Bottling again? Yeah.
Yeah. One of the best things about it, though, is I sit myself a port while I'm sitting there doing the bottling on it. So that's a fun
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
That's the show for tonight. We used to do before we get on air. So.
Yeah, we didn't have enough time, and they're counting down. It's like, you know, we're talking. It's like, your show will start in 5 seconds. No, it isn't. We're still discussing.
We're still talking.
Well, I'm glad we caught up, and everybody's caught up to date with us. Probably going, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
On to the program.
So you can skip the first 10 minutes or 12 minutes of the program, and then we'll get to the to the meat of it. On it.
Okay. And now the show starts.
Now the show, the opening. we got some. One thing I want to talk about tonight, and Mike and I were talking a little bit about this before we got on there, is futures, wine futures. I've known about futures for a long, long time. It's something I learned about many years ago. Actually, I used to play in the futures market, the stock market, many years ago. Oh, geez. Mid and late 70s, I did a lot of futures trading. Never did wine, though. Never got into wine. Because wine really is a long-term thing and a long-term investment if you're going to do wine futures. But futures market of wine, if you're not familiar with it, let me tell you some stuff about the futures market. What it is, the best thing to do is a little article out of the Wine Enthusiast magazine this month, September issue. I see this month, or on magazines, always a month ahead. But a writer by the name of Zerwinski is the managing editor of the Wine Enthusiast magazine, wrote an article on futures, a one-page article, actually a one-page thing there, the fallacy of the futures. You know, not really. Futures are good. They've made money for people and have for years. But futures, actually what you're doing is you're taking a wine in the barrel, tasting it, and then trying to figure out what this is going to be worth and if you should purchase it now. to have it 20 years from now. You're actually purchasing the wine in the barrel, and then it's going to be bottled, and then you put it away, and then you have it for future sale or consumption or whatever you want to do. The futures market in wine has been good for years. For those who've been involved with it, it's always been good for years. But then but then it's, you don't hear about it too much anymore. And I don't know why, which is really odd, because the futures market is still going on. It's not only referred to as futures, but what is the Imprimeur, E-N-P-R-I-M-E-U-R, Imprimeur. It's referring to buying wine after it's made, but before it's bottled, basically is what it is. 6 months or so after it's been vintaged, after it's been picked, while the wine is still in the tank or the barrels or whatever, you sample it, and samplings are usually available to people who wholesale buyers and wine journalists and stuff like that. I've always said if you're going to get an opportunity to do a barrel tasting, you really should jump on it and do it. Barrel tastings are fun. They're really fun. The wine isn't the wine that you get in the bottle. Most barrel tastings give you an appreciation of the winemaker, of what he's doing, how he's able to taste that wine in that barrel and know what it's going to be like after a year in oak or 2 years in oak or five or whatever, and be able to say, okay, this is what we want, or we need to do this, or it needs to be an oak for this long to get what I want, and things like that. Gives you a better appreciation for the winemaker and what he's able to do. So you do the tasting, the barrel tasting, and then the buyers place their orders based on their assessment of the wine, of how they think the wine is going to be for future stock, for future customers. The wine isn't bottled and it's not shipped for another year or two, but that's when they do it. But it gives them a better price. The journalists usually rate the wines and publish their notes and then print them online and online media. Now, there's a lot. You can look up Wine Future bloggers. There's quite a few out there now. When I was doing research on this thing, I ran across a whole bunch of different bloggers. And I've got some I'm going to be quoting here tonight and telling you about. But there's a lot of Wine Futures bloggers. And I won't editorialize yet. So then they jump out and say, okay, they're going to publish these ratings and tell you what they're going to be like. Now, Bordeaux is usually the big one. The Bordeaux futures, or Imprimeur, has been competitive for years, and it's becoming more so with the internet and online media, wine media, and we're getting a lot of celebrity wine critics now. Who have made a big name for themselves doing, you know, futures. So it's becoming very competitive out there. And especially in the case of Bordeaux Imprimeur, or Bordeaux wine futures, the wines are released in several stages, or what they call tranches, T-R-A-N-C-H-E-S, in which the prices are adjusted up and down according to how successful the previous release was, of the previous tranche. So the first tranche, or the first release, usually is what attracts the most attention. That's usually what people start looking at. Here, this, the wine futures on this Bordeaux is selling for $54 a bottle right now, but it should be worth $120 a bottle in 5 years. If there's a good response to that, if people jump on that and do it, then the next tranche will be rated probably higher and sell for more, or depends on the reaction. So it's what happens now. This is basically Bordeaux futures. Others aren't quite as competitive, if we, you know, if you will. Buying wine in Premier. Now, in Premier, I just noticed here on this little note that literally means in youth, which makes sense. Or wine futures can be a good investment. The initial release prices are usually the lowest at which the wine will ever be sold when it's released. Now, for example, the Bordeaux 2000 vintage was highly profitable for futures and in Premier investors. The wines were, you know, in great demand. Everybody was looking for it and everything else. And the initial price was actually too low for what they were selling it for. And even those who bought the second and third tranche prices saw the value of the wines rise quickly. So the 2000 Bordeaux, it was a great year for futures. Now, when I say the Bordeaux, it's, for example, let's pick out a couple of different ones. Chateau Montan Rothschild, let's say, okay. Chateau Montan Rothschild, the initial release was selling for like $250. By June of 2003, that had jumped up to about $350. By June of 2005, it was worth closer to $450. And by June of 2006, it had jumped up to about $550, increasing by over $100 a year. And those, you know, it's what futures does for you. And if you're investing in them and you're holding these wines and to release them for sale, then you've got yourself a great price increase. Say you bought these at $250 or $225 or around there. And in, you know, 3 years, they're already up to $550 or so. The Chateau Latour, selling for around $250 at release, went for after 6 years, was selling for $650. So that's what futures do. You base it on what you think it's going to be. Now, not all of them are certain. It's a high risk thing. I mean, futures really are a high risk thing. In wine as well as, you know, any other commodities like I was trading in, it's a high risk. But with a high risk, you can get a high return. For example, the 97 Bordeaux future prices were originally too high, and after a few years, they started to decline. So you go out and you buy yourself a Chateau Haut-Brion for, you know, $450, and think you're going to hang on to it for a few years, and after 7 years, it's only worth $300. You're up the street, up the creek. I mean, it just there's nothing you can do about it. So that's what wine futures is and what wine futures does. Now there's lots of different things. When you start looking at wine futures, there's lots of different things you also have to consider, and you got to look at different aspects of it. Oh, come on, don't. Investing in wine futures, as soon as my screen says it's going to show me, what you need to know about investing in wine futures. I've got a couple of things to talk about here on this. Point that's is really slow tonight. There we go. This article, this is out of comparethefinancialmarkets.com. It says that wine investing is nothing new, but it's only in the last 10 or 20 years that it's became lucrative for non-private collectors. It says it's usually a long tradition of buying two or three times more wine than they drink and then resell it later once the prices have went up for the profit. various places and resources will store the wine for you, and and they will also increase the prices if they do it there. That's why these big Wine Spectator magazine comes out with their list of restaurants every year. Just a month or so ago was their newest list. And these cellars that these places have, the prices of these wines, they say here this is worth, you know, $10,000. And they're saying, wow, you're paying a lot of money for that. No, they didn't. A lot of these they've had for a long time. And so you say it's worth $10,000 now. It's based on the fact that it's appreciated over the years, and it is worth $10,000. But they guarantee you. Well, probably a political advertisement. There are many of those that come in. But new investments
put them on the
are...
air.
Yeah, I can get them on the air.
You're on.
You're on. What? Who is this, really? some people just, you know, if you have a storage space, you can do it. You can rent places, though, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. Right now, there are many new investment trusts that are coming out in Western Europe, and especially United Kingdom. And this is something that Brexit is in the wine field, what they're looking at, the investment trust, because there are trusts in the United Kingdom that is not just in the United Kingdom, but also they're in partnership with other places in the European Union. I saw something about this Brexit that's they're concerned about what's going to happen to futures and these different groups and stuff. So no answers, just concern right now. So some of the trusts are we get collectors from China, Russia, South America, who are starting to become more and more interested in wines made in France, Italy, and Spain. And Bordeaux, and Bordeaux's always in high demand because of the reputation, and usually it does increase in value. It's fine wine investment is a growing business, and it's not just Bordeaux, but you're also getting wines from a lot of other areas that are starting to be used as a futures of the different wines. Choosing the best wine to invest can be hard, though. You have to consider everything. You have to question the investments. You have to understand if it can increase, what is the history of it. A lot of investment firms are now starting to do wine future investments and study it and let you know about it and talk about what's available and what is available on the different wines and if it will be good and if it's worth the time and effort to purchase that wine and all this other stuff. I mean, it's a lot of things are coming out now about that. If you're going to do wine features though, and these are a few things you need to consider yourself, and it's nice to be able to have somebody that you can turn to, but when you start turning to investment firms and stuff, they are going to charge you. That's how they make their money, obviously. But the if you want to keep it yourself, if you want to do everything yourself, there's a few things that you need to do. Some points here for you on wine futures. Find yourself a good merchant, a reputable merchant. It might be tempting to go for the lowest price futures that you can find, but that's just as risky as any of them. You know, it gives you just a lower price to start with. And obviously if you're going to be in futures, you're going to have to be willing to risk your money. Bottom line, if you can't afford to lose it, don't do it. And that's really my attitude about anything in the stock market. If you can't afford to lose it, don't do it. But wine futures can return your money. You're not going to see your wine for a couple years, and then after that, you're going to have to put it away for a period of time. Merchants that have been dealing with wine futures for decades are likely to have a long-standing relationship with brokers, and they also probably know what wines are being selected and sought. So you need to keep that stuff in mind if you're starting. High-risk nature of buying in premier or as a youth of the wines is risky, but it, again, can give you a good return in the long run. It's not going to happen overnight. It's also important to develop a relationship with your merchant so that you're aware of your preferences. Advance notice helps early, so you don't have to settle for the runt of the litter. Decanter Magazine says sometimes you have to accept lesser wines if you wish to obtain great ones in a shipment. And they do that. You'll say, okay, we've got the futures for this year, but we're also moving this one. We can sell this to you as a package. And overall, it's going to be better for you because you're going to be getting a better package of the high-end one that you want by taking the lower-end wine that is available. Read the comments. Read the review comments. Again, there's a lot of websites popping up out there now. A lot of different ones talking about futures. For 3 weeks in the spring before wine futures become available, there are all sorts of critics and journalists and all that that have been out there sampling and tasting and doing, you know, what they can to get in there to taste the previous year's harvest. And this is when you start doing your homework. You start reading these blogs. You're going to see a pattern established if you start looking at all these. This pattern is going to say, hey, you know, this wine is good. You look at this blog and they'll say, you know, that wine is good. And then another blog and said, this wine is good, or this one. And if you get a majority of them that are saying the wine is good, then you get a sense of which wines you'll promise and which ones you want to get and which ones you want to avoid, and even an idea of, you know, what prices you should be paying, which is important. Buy your futures. Paying the opening price to your merchant for wines you want as soon as the offer goes on sale through the website. You will not be dealing directly with the Chateau or the negotiant. You will be dealing with wine brokers and intermediaries between the Chateaus and the merchants. So your merchant handles these networks, so your job is simply to buy from them. But you all probably have already heard all the comments and confirmed with the Chateau that you're interested in all this other stuff before that point. So it's, you know, you've done your homework, you've done your footwork, your due diligence of finding out what you're looking for. So if you act fast. Now, you have to be careful, too, if you're looking at a particular one. Some chateaus sell all their wine through futures. And I ran across that comment quite a few times while I was doing research for this. Some chateaus will, that's all they do is sell their wines on futures. And they're excellent wines. They do a great job, but you're not going to find that wine anywhere else. It's sold all to on futures, and they make maybe 500 cases. That's your total run, and that's it. You know, 50 cases, some of them even. And so these will go fast. And also, again, like I said earlier, once a certain tranche is sold out, then the next one is going to be offered at a higher price. So once you do your first one, your second one is going to be more expensive, as is the third on from there. So it's important to be sure that you're in there on the ground floor getting your first bid in and first choices. Then you may not see your purchased wines for up to 2 years or more. And that's just your purchased wine now, okay? That's not what you're going to take home and sit down and have a Chateau Lebrion or anything else with it. You're going to have to wait after you've received your wine, because these are just barrels that they're tasting. You're basing it on it being bottled from the barrels, so you're looking at another couple years, sometimes even more, before you get it. Then once you get your wine, you're looking at aging it. Now, this could take up to another 7 years or more. I mean, it depends on how long you want to age it yourself. The storing the wine becomes critical at this point. You need to preserve the characteristics and all that. So you need to have yourself, if you don't have your own wine cellar, climate-controlled room, or whatever it is you happen to be using, then you need to find some place that will store it for you. And a lot of places out there offer it. I know ABC Liquor here in Florida, a lot of their stores have a cellar that you can rent space in. You can take your wine in a box or, you know, bottles or whatever you want to do and rent a space in there. It's climate controlled and all that. Another thing that you might look at, too, is if you're going to age your wines in something like that or any type of facility that is going to age it, get insurance. Now, a lot of these places will have insurance, but it is minimal, just enough so that they can have it. Get your own insurance. Might cost you a little bit more, but in the long run, it could pay off. There's all sorts of inexpensive policies out there for wine futures. Find reputable companies, and you know, the chances of anything going bad are slim. But if you've invested $5,000 into some cases of wine and the storm goes through and the electricity gets knocked off for a week, you really want something that is going to protect your investment, protect your money. So, and delivery too. Don't forget your delivery when you get those wines shipped to you. So these are all costs. These are all things you're going to figure into it. And then sell the wine. You've got the wine now. You've held on to it. You've done what you need to do. You've taken care of it. You go and look at it every couple of weeks and pet the box, and you're all excited and wiggly whenever you think it's getting closer and closer. You can profit from it. The one way would be to sell the wine to collectors or other investors when the wine is still relatively young. You can also sell it. If the price starts going up right away, you don't have to hang on to it for 5, 7, 10 years. You can sell it after a couple of years. Something is released and all of a sudden a big demand comes out for it, and you can get rid of it. Find yourself a buyer and say, hey, you know, I've got a case of this. I'm willing to let it go for so much a bottle. So that's one way to do it. Or you can wait until the wine ages and matures. You can hold on to it until the thing. Bordeaux, for example, could mean 10 years of hanging on to it, 10 years of letting it sit there, 10 years of letting it continue to improve in the bottle, and then pick it up. Just like I was telling you a little bit earlier, you know, an early investment of $250 on some of those Bordeaux was returning $750 just as short as 3 or 4 years later. So, or 5, 6 years later, rather. So, it, you know, it's it's a decision, something that you need to look at, need to figure out what you want to do on it. This is out of the Telegraph, Investing in Wine, Seven Things You Need to Know. Now, this is just not so much futures, but other ways to invest in wine. Let me read you this first little part here. It says, wondering how best to invest 10,000 pounds or more you have spare? Fine wine boasts one of the most promising asset classes in the last 20 years, and the most expensive lot of wine ever sold going under the hammer in October was at Sotheby's auction in Hong Kong. They had 114 bottles of Romane Conti Burgundy went for £1,035,000, or around £9,800 a bottle. So, you know, again, the Burgundies, the Bordeaux, you hang on to those, you keep those for a while, and, you know, the chances of them going up are always good. That's why Bordeaux are always a good investment. Others, you are a little bit more iffy. But invest in what you can justify losing or drink. Again, that's something I just said. If you can't afford to lose it, don't spend it on that, because it's a long-term investment. It's a long-term thing. It's not something that's not going to help if you try to bring it out early. Sometimes you can. Sometimes there's a market for it, but you're going to find that it could take a big hit. Purchase the very best you can afford. This is futures anything. I mean, first growth Bordeaux, Chateau Lafite, Menton Lafite, Rothschild, or Chateau Lafite, Rothschild, Menton Rothschild, Margaux, Latour, Haudrion. These all have been good investments for centuries. It's always been a good return. Go down to your local store, your wine shop and all that, and look how much those bottles are selling for. And they're one bottle of the stuff that they're getting is going to cost you $700, $800, $900. And yeah, so it's always a good investment. Also, champagnes, top champagnes are something to look at. Super Tuscan wines have performed steadily in recent years too. This is another area that you can look at. You don't have to just stay with the Bordeaux and Burgundies. Italian wines have been doing well. And California. California, you've got some small cult wineries that are doing a phenomenal job out there. And these wineries are offering their wines as a futures market, and they've increased significantly in value. Screaming Eagle Winery for one of them. It's great. There's a lot of them out there that are little small boutique wineries that make 150, 200 cases a year, but it's just mouth-watering wines. I've had some of mine. They're just phenomenal. Also, you have to look at how much you expect to return on it. You can go to all this work and everything else, and again, it's a high risk, and you know, there's always something that could happen, but you have to look at how much return you're looking at. If you're willing to settle for a smaller return, sell them early. There's all sorts of websites out there that you can start checking on prices. WineSearcher.com is a good one. I've checked down on prices before myself. WINE Searcher, SEARCHER.com. WineSearcher.com is very good for checking prices and seeing what is available and what's going on with it. So, and if you're going to do futures, if you're going to invest in wine, if you're going to do any of this stuff, again, take a long-term view on it, not short-term. It's not a quick return. Same thing with stock market or anything. You look at it as it's going to be something like a stock market, you're going to get your return over a long period, but it's not going to be something that's going to be returned to you quickly. And again, this article is saying stored in a government bonded warehouse or someplace where you know where it is, it's bonded, and the bond, you know, gives you the security knowing that they have bonds to cover any damage or any loss. Accidents will happen. You know, maybe damage, stolen. You know, this is something we've talked about, things being broken into and stuff. It could be stolen. Any number of things could happen to your wine. But if you, again, do your homework and are sure of what it's like, and then you usually don't have a problem. And let me talk about in bond, too. Let me talk about that for a second if you're going to be storing. All wineries in this country are bonded. This is, we're required to have state bonds and federal bonds. Wines are shipped in bond. They are, if they are in bond without leaving the warehouses and stuff, or if they're in bond at the winery, they are non-taxed. But once they are removed from bond, then they have to have tax paid on them. So if you're going to be storing your wine once you receive it in a bonded warehouse, you're pretty much tax-free. But once it leaves that warehouse, then you're going to be liable for taxes. So consider the tax aspect of it, too. If you don't pay it up front, you will be paying it, because the government will not let you forget it. And the warehouse is usually required every month to do an inventory. And a lot of states require inventories. Federal government requires it, depending on the volume you have and what you're doing, all sorts of stuff. So you're not going to be able to hide it. And if you do hide it in your own little personal cellar, then, you know, it's yeah, you can probably do that and get away with it, but I didn't say that. The wine futures, wine in premier. The best way for investors and collectors by classified growth per doe is usually through wine futures. The greatest security is the Bordeaux's. The collectors can deal with the Chateaus directly. Once you're committing to the young wines and maturing it and all that stuff, there's could always be problems along the line. And this is something you always have to consider. There could be problems at any step of the winemaking. That's why it's important to know the winery. Do research on the winery, not just the futures that you're going to invest in, but also the winery itself. How stable are they? Are they, you know, has the winemaker been there for a long time? Has he turned out good product previously? Are they having any issues in any aspect of it, of the industry, not just in the winery itself, but, you know, is somebody looking at taking them over? Are they possibly going to be bought out or sold or something? So these are all things that you need to look at whenever you are going to invest in the futures. And then one other thing here, certainly be considered more tax efficient than other forms of investment. There are a number of key considerations to make, and it's crucial to observe that legislation is in this area is not always black and white. There you go again, probably another political advertisement, or maybe it's somebody calling in. But it's, you know, the legislations in wine futures is not always clear. You know, you need to really know about what's going on in tax liabilities and stuff like that. If you're hanging on to a bottle of or a case of wine or a couple of cases of wine for 10 years and then you sell it for a handsome profit, you need to be sure you know your liabilities, your tax liabilities, your excise tax and stuff. Wine falls into different categories than other items, you know. Not like hanging on to your couch for 10 years and reupholstering it and selling it. It's a completely different thing. So these are all things that you need to consider. These are all things that you need to look at if you're going to do wine futures. Wine futures can be very lucrative. They really can. Got to have the money to put into it. For example, 1988 6-bottle Chateau Peugeot was selling for $54 a bottle, and 6 years later it was going for $210 a bottle. There's other situations too where you'll pay $65 a bottle or $75 a bottle for each bottle in the case. And they come out, and it's not quite up to par, and they get a lower rating than what you had hoped or expected, and it sells for right around that same price in 10 years. So watch your futures. It's fun to play with it. You don't have to buy wine. You can always set back and just, you know, play a fantasy wine futures game if you want. I like I said at the beginning, I did a lot of futures trading a number of years ago, and when I quit doing it, I missed it, and I used to look at the paper and, you know, fill out little forms and stuff like that that I made up for myself, and used to follow them, and then you get, oh, I should have invested in that, and oh, I'm glad I didn't invest in that, and stuff like that. So you can do that with your wine futures. It's you know, go look at it and read your blogs and stuff and see. And if you're consistently good, you know, set some money aside and try to talk other members of the family into not going on vacation because you are going to invest in wine futures. So it's fun, though. You know, it could be aggravating when you start seeing prices fall, but that happens with everything.
Yeah.
Oh, but wine futures.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, wine futures it's been around for a while. Usually it's like I say, Burgundy, Bordeaux, and stuff like that. But other areas are starting to pop up now. You're seeing wine futures from California. You're seeing from Washington, Oregon, Spain, Italy, Germany. There's, you know, different areas that are offering wine futures, and it's for long term, but it's fun. It really is. It's fun stuff to play with and all that. I probably should have looked up some wine future blogs, and I could have given some addresses. But you all out there can find your wine future blogs. It's easy enough to do that. So, wine futures. I don't think they have it for beer. Beer is not a long-term thing, so I don't think there's beer futures. So, even with all the craft beers out there, you're going to consume that pretty fast. A couple other things we're going to talk about here before we close off. There's nothing happening this weekend. It is a quiet weekend for us at the winery. So, but a couple of things I want to hit on quickly here. And just hit my microphone while I am finding this one. Let me take a sip of my peach wine. That's very peachy. Yeah, there you go. what is peach wine?
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. You're right.
Oh, I forgot about it.
That's very peachy. I always enjoy that. It's surprisingly peachy. It's just a hint of alcohol, like I say, underneath it, but just very peachy. We have talked about this over and over again. I just, you know, want to end. I think it's over. The arsenic scare, herbicide scare of wines and stuff. It just, one thing I saw here, it says an average man would need to put back 5 glasses of wine per day, every day, to consume enough inorganic arsenic to run the risk of causing health problems. At such a rate of consumption, that hypothetical person would likely have several other health concerns before he would have any problems with anything related to arsenic. So, you know, this big arsenic scare, I think it's gone away, though. I think they, you know, the judge ruled against the people who were suing, and they said they're going to pursue it, but I haven't seen anything at all where they're looking at pursuing it. So, that's, you know, I think it's dead in the water now. So, but I just saw that and I thought, geez, that's put it in perspective a little bit how arsenic in wine. And one other thing, I saw this article here and I've got another thing too I want to tell you all about. I saw this article. This is out of Florida Forward. It's the Florida wine industry in a blog. I don't know who puts it on. Florida Agribusiness. Okay, there you go. It's Florida Forward. It says Florida wine industry continues to mature. And they said this article said there's 25 certified farm wineries in Florida. We are a certified farm winery. The wine industry is chugging along. A lot of fruits being used in a lot of wineries. We're still not the top of the food chain yet, but Florida is getting a lot of visitors and a lot of increased traffic because of the agritourism. The Florida wineries that grow commodities and grapes and other fruits and also sell the fruits and different things separate from the wine. We've talked to some wineries in Florida that do that. We're not California, Virginia, New York, and we don't grow Chardonnay or Merlot, but we do grow our own grapes, and also the muscadine grape grows wild in Florida, common throughout the Southeast. Going by the numbers, Florida appears to be 9th largest wine producing state in the nation. 9th largest. I mean, out of 50 states, we're in the top 10. That's according to the 2015 data from the TTB. Those numbers are deceiving, they're saying, because a lot of wine rebottled in Florida and then shipped to other destinations such as Caribbean and things like that. The industry is has an impact of $895 million a year, on the last report, which was way back in 2010. I'm sure there are newer reports if they start digging them out. And, there are, wineries all over Florida that are doing well in the business and are popping up all over the place. A number of years ago, manager and my wife and I went on a trip around the state visiting wineries, and we visited, I think, like 18 of them at the time. This was 10 years ago. Wow. With 18 of them, I think it's more than doubled that now in the number of wineries that are in the state of Florida. So, and I hear people coming in and saying, you know, we went to such and such winery. And I'm going, where's that? What, you know, and they say, oh, that's one up in, you know, and I've never heard of a lot of these. So they're popping up all over the place. I get an e-letter. All right, I'm on the mailing list for virginiawine.org. A Megan Womack is the marketing manager for virginiawine.org. And if you want to become on the mailing list, go to virginiawine.org. You can sign up for it. I get one a couple times a week, if that much. But the one that came out today, I wanted to share with you, and I'll finish up with this. It says, Dear Virginia wine lovers, we have exciting news. The Virginia Wine Summit has been nominated for the Best Wine Festival in USA Today's 10 Best Readers' Choice Awards. We are currently in sixth place and hope that you will vote us all the way to number one. The annual Virginia Wine Summit is a celebration of Virginia's wine and food culture. Discover the unique flavors of wines from the Commonwealth while interacting with Virginia winemakers, national beverage professionals, and wine writers. This is Vote for Virginia Wine, and it has a little place you can click on this here. You can vote once a day. Voting closes at 12 p.m. on Monday, August 15th. So that's 11 days away. Thank you for your continued support of Virginia Wine. So sign up for this. Megan Womack is, like I say, marketing director. But go to virginiawines.org, or Virginia Wine, no S's on it, virginiawine.org, and subscribe. And she sent some interesting stuff. Obviously tooting the horn of Virginia Wines, but some interesting stuff. I really need to start calling some more Virginia winemakers too. I say that all the time, and I get hung up, and then Thursday evening around 4 o'clock gets here, and I'm going, oh man, I haven't called anybody.
Having guests and everything. Let's see. And also, we're in August now. They're not harvesting is over with, right? Or does that begin?
No,
end of August,
it's just starting in some areas.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just starting in some areas, you know. Yeah. I should have done it in the spring. Well, actually, there's always something to do every time of the year. So, you know, as far as that goes. But, yeah, some areas should be, well, we're early August. So it's usually not until the end of August. So
yeah,
we should be good on that. So, but, oh, well.
Well, I've been harvesting, I guess since spring started, and it's just an ongoing process, but it's not anything you can consume. Yeah, well, it's weeds. It's not anything, you know.
I know that.
Now, I can grow weeds. I got plenty of that. I'm not good with
We have this this vine growing on the fence out in front of the winery. It's very pretty. Mm-hmm. It's got these pretty flowers on it, yellow, and some red ones pop up there. And it's growing very well along the fence. I haven't cut it down or done anything. I figured, it's pretty. I'm going to leave it there. Lady came in the other day, and she goes, oh, she said, that is so pretty. She says, can I take a clipping of it? What is that? I say, we call it a weed. She goes, that's a weed? I go, yes, it is.
Take all you want.
Take all you want, yeah. All the clippings
not if
you want.
But if it looks good, you know, what the heck?
It does. It does look pretty there, you know. But, the thing is, if I were to plant a vine there to grow along that fence, it would probably not grow. It would probably stunt and not grow. But that weed just took off, and it grows by itself, and it's very pretty, and it's just really going crazy. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Florida grown. Yeah.
Florida grown.
yes. So you don't have any events this weekend.
No.
And, maybe less than a month, but I was waiting for the newsletter to come in. And last week I got the newsletter and I go, Oh, we're going to talk about events now. You know, we can bring that up to date and everything. And then, we didn't have a show.
You couldn't get on
no.
Blog Talk Radio either, could you?
Correct. You know, this was something they completely, it was something wrong. Couldn't get in the, after I posted the show, I couldn't get into the dashboard, couldn't get into anything. And they had a little note on the website that, you know, oh, we're down, we're doing maintenance or something, and Thursday was completely off. Yeah, that was strange. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll jump in there and change the date after I posted the show. I said, well, I'll go in there and change the date so I can just have it automatically for today, and I wouldn't re-enter the, you know, the information and everything. And I tried to log in, and it said can't even log in, so I couldn't change the date. And you know, it went on as usual, I guess. But yeah, it was, they were major issues. So I'm glad they got it fixed. That's
yeah, me but, too. I you know, I noticed your note saying we can't get into Blog Talk Radio. I'm saying, well, you know, I'm glad, you know, that
normally their main page shows, you know, all the upcoming shows and things like that and how to subscribe and all that kind of stuff. And this time it just was one little square thing in the middle of the screen. It said, basically, we're down.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't get anything from work. I mean, up there we're on dial-up, and we don't even keep computers there because it's so slow. And so I never looked. Never got online. Yeah. I got home about 8:30 that night, and so I noticed your email, your post saying it was down. So,
yep.
Oh, well.
Yeah, definitely out. Okay, well, so we come back this week, and we'll be back next week. August the 11th will be the next show, and we'll have winery information at that time. So,
yes.
You have events coming up the following weekend, next weekend. So we'll tell you all about those next Thursday, plus some more information on All About Wine. I guess we will close the show for now, and join us again next week. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great week, and keep drinking wine.
That's right. Thank you all for listening.
All right, thank you. All right. We'll see you all next time.
All right. Bye now.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75, or east of U.S. 19 and U.S. 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.